Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and beer is better than nothing.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
We're the Drunk Guys, and this week we are reading Dr. No by Percival Everett.
And I am starting with a beer. So, this book, not the main character, but the secondary main character, wants to be a Bond villain. And so, he's got all this crazy technology, so it's kind of an example of Futurism by Finn Beck. This is a double IPA, as is every single beer by Finn Beck.
Two or three are not.
There are some singles and the odd triple. So, Jimmy, you picked this book for us.
No, I did not.
No, I picked this book for us.
Oh, you fool.
I knew.
Which I had not read.
I forgot nothing. Something.
Which I had not read, but I heard it was okay. I'm like, all right. He's an interesting.
Good enough for us.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Very consistently.
I heard it was okay.
Okay.
Well, I've heard it was okay, which means it was better than 90% of the books we've read for the podcast.
Yeah.
Anyway, and it was okay.
Yeah.
Join us next week.
Tell us what you thought.
So, anyway, story revolves around, okay, this is a very strange book. This is much stranger than the other two Percival Everett books we read. And those were also kind of weird. But, okay, in this one, the main character is an autistic math professor who gets recruited by a guy named John Milton Bradley Sill. Why he has to be named Milton Bradley, because that's like a funny, it's like, you know, a board game company. Why did that matter anywhere in the book? It didn't. But anyway, who is a billionaire?
People were in trouble, and he wasn't going to say sorry.
He had a monopoly on
board game
evil.
Connections in this game of life, Nate. Guess who?
Yahtzee.
Anyway, so he is
to ride.
The guy is a billionaire, and he literally says right in the beginning, I want to be a Bond villain. And it's like, yeah, okay, great. But unlike every other Bond villain, he's black, and he's not like evil just for being evil. He just, you know, or it's also not part of the Cold War, so it's definitely not James Bond. But anyway, he wants to, like, get revenge on the people who, like, were mean to his parents and killed his dad because they were covering up the MLK, Martin Luther King assassination. They were covering up the assassination of Martin Luther King.
We don't really learn this until the end, right? Or do they?
It's like we do it earlier.
No, yeah, in the middle. You get a couple of random chapters from his perspective instead of the main character's perspective. Oh, okay, but the main character, his name is
Wala Keetu,
although he says that's the name I picked. That's the name that I'm going by, but I'm actually Ralph Townsend, which is apparently the actual character from a different one of his novels.
Well, that's just confusing.
But it's like, now I'm Wala Keetu now. And both of those words mean nothing in two different languages. It's literally the word for nothing. And the whole book revolves around wordplay with the word nothing.
Yeah, that definitely never gets tiring. The who's on first plot of nothing. There are multiple scenes and like, what are you here for? I'm here for nothing. Okay, but that is something, but it means nothing. Oh, fucking, the first couple of times it's funny.
We have nothing to worry about. Oh, fuck, that's right. Oh, shit. Yeah, a lot of jokes like that. So anyway, and he's a math professor, so they go into this whole like thing where it's like, well, nothing isn't nothing. It's actually something because it has a name and even sometimes a number. So therefore, it's not nothing, nothing. It's actually something. And that's like the first line of the book, pretty much. And it's like, wow, huh, that's strange. And then it makes less sense after that. So he is right away in like the first chapter or first second chapter, he meets John Milton Bradley Sill, who wants to be a Bond villain. It's like, I'll pay you $3 million to help me with nothing. And he says, because you're the expert on nothing. Because this guy is a math professor. He like literally writes math papers.
He teaches
on
a Brown.
A Brown, which Does the real Percival Everett teach at Brown? Oh, no, he just went to Brown, one of the two.
Sure.
One of the two. Anyway, so he's like, okay, I'll take your $3 million. Sure. But then immediately the police start, the police are like, something very suspicious is happening. And they're like, but they're from they're not the FBI or the CIA. They're like, we're another, he gets arrested. And like, we're another,
agency
department. You're never going to guess what it is. That was like, listen, there are a lot of letters of the alphabet. So I could just guess for a long time. You'll never get it.
Also, the
Department
cop is,
of Energy. It was that's what they do.
The cop's name is Agent Bill Clinton.
Yeah,
which must be a pretty common name if you think about it.
Yeah, probably.
And did the other one have a name?
His black partner.
Yeah,
I mean
Al Gore.
Billary Clinton.
But Walukitu does not answer their questions because he's a fucking, you know, he's like autistic and very direct and saying shit like, I'm doing nothing. And they're like, what does it mean? And they didn't read the first.
Like, what does John Sill want? He wants nothing. What's fuck you, name? Just tell us. No, he wants nothing. That's what he told me.
And this is the best connection I can come up with this beer. They're like, this guy's fucking stubborn as a goddamn muley buck. I'm excited to drink this beer because this was sent to us by a patron and a listener, an all-around cool guy and his wife. So This is Muley Buck Mosaic IPA from a new brewery for us, Kettle House Brewing Company. And I want to guess it's my first beer from Montana, honestly. I don't think too much Montana beer makes its way out to us. So thanks, Seth and Gail, for sending this beer. You know, other people could do it too. I don't know if it's against the law or not. That's for you to figure out, but...
It's not against the law. As long as you're not mailing it to a child, I guess.
We're also, if they buy it and ship it to us, it's probably more legal than if we buy it and they ship it to us, if you know what I mean. Because it's not a sale if they already bought it.
Mm. Well, I'll tell you, it's a very nice IPA. I had, honestly, low expectations for this beer to survive the mail. This is pretty damn good. And it's made with a deer made out of little pieces like a mosaic. It's that fucking same joke we make. It's destiny. This is great. Great beer. Thanks, Seth and Gil. And if you want to help us out, you could send us beer. Just reach out. We'll tell you where to send it in a place that is untraceable by the law. Or you could help us out by going to patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub and becoming a supporter or leaving us a good review. Just got another 1-star one on Spotify, which made me sad for several days. Yeah,
what'd they say? Bummer.
Well, they didn't write a comment. They just, they were craven. And they just were like, this is unthoughtful. 1-star, I guess. Fucking piece of shit. So back
too
to
much
the
beer.
Book.
Ew.
Yeah. People with different opinions than me on the internet. What is this stuff even for?
So John Sill, the Bond villain, is like, okay, I am rich because my mom invested in jazz clubs and brothels and got super wealthy. And then somehow I became a billionaire for that. Oh, just from owning a lot of property, probably. And so he's like a billionaire. And he's like, I'm pissed at people for being racist. So that's why I'm a Bond villain. This middle part of the book, I do not remember very well.
Well, also another thing we should mention that kind of matters is Walukitu has a one-legged dog named Trigo, I guess it is, or Trigo.
I thought it was like because three not legs.
He could try to go, but he can't. I assumed it was trigonometry, but I could be.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. This is
There's so many ways that dog could be named Trigo.
Yep. And the dog, like, he can't, obviously can't walk the dog, so the dog just, like, takes a dump and then he cleans it up.
He carries it in like a little baby Bjorn, and
he frequently has dreams where he discusses plot points with the dog.
Yeah, and he'll be like, "Oh, I'm dreaming because the dog is speaking to me," and it's like, "Yeah, fucking idiot." And the dog keeps talking and helping explain things to us. So that's also a thing happening. And then he has a friend who's a female mathematician. That's how you know this is fictional. Oh, and then I forget her fucking name already.
Eigenvector.
Yeah, it was another ridiculous name.
I had to look up,
must mean something.
I had to look up Eigen, and it was like It's a German word.
Ghostbusters.
It's a German word meaning like the self, like the thing that defines a set of characteristics, or some sort of weird, you know, tautological circle jerk word that...
It's a philosophy, a psychology kind of term, probably.
Well, no, it's actually a math term, because there's a very specific math thing that is way beyond what I actually know how to do, that which is called, it's a bunch of calculus. It's like a thing, a calculus thing. It's called an eigenvector or an eigenvalue. That's as specific as I can be about it, because I majored in the humanities.
Yeah.
But it is like a calculus term.
Oh, the humanities.
It is a calculus term. That I know.
Oh, so it was made up by and a big fucking nerd Newton.
There was a, so Malcolm Gladwell, who, you know, is like one of the most popular writers in the last like 20 years, because he's, you know, at least in terms of number of book sales. And then in one of his books, he was, one of his articles for like New Yorker or something like that, all he does is just goes and talks to people and then writes down what they said. And an engineer used the word eigenvector or something like that, eigenvalue, but he spelled it I-G-O-N. And some like guy who actually knew math was like, what a fucking idiot. He doesn't actually, but it's also, he writes for the New Yorker. So no one at the New Yorker knows calculus either. So they didn't know that it was wrong.
You know, that wasn't the wrongest Malcolm Gladwell has been.
No.
And he still made a lot of money.
It does show
article.
He doesn't actually research his stuff that well.
He does a lot of talking out of his ass.
Tells a good story, but he does his, when you actually think about it, it's like, no, that doesn't fit.
But for people who read one book every 4 years, it makes them feel smart.
One of our first episodes was on Outliers, which felt like, I was like, oh, this makes sense. And parts of it do, and other parts are like, not really. And I just feel like if I knew more about those parts that I thought made sense, I'd think those didn't make sense either.
Yeah.
So eigenvector is like also a nerdy girl, but I guess she's hot, but like doesn't know it yet in like a she's all that sort of way. Like she has to take off her overalls and let her hair down and then she's hot.
Yeah, she has to give up art and someone has a, I just have this dress lying around. Like, oh, prom queen now. Yeah.
No, it's a leather jumpsuit. It's a skin tight leather jumpsuit she's wearing later in the book.
Well, multiple times throughout the book, it'll be mentioned, like they end up in like the second half going to Syl's various villain lairs, like his yacht and his submarine and his base over here.
His mansion in Corsica.
Yeah. And there's always a, you know, his goons, like in a Bond movie, how they're like half the time they're like uniformed and shit. like they're like, you know, that like the goons that all work in like Dr. Evil or whatever his place.
At one point they're at a table and the chair disappears. He's like, oh, it fell into my pool of sharks. I didn't need that guy anymore.
Well, because that guy disappointed him on his return on like drug smuggling money or something.
He had like a 3.5% growth and not 4.2% growth. So he had to be fed to sharks. It's just like working for Goldman Sachs.
And you got to get rid of the bottom 5% every year. It keeps things lively. But there, all the time that there's another female goon later on. I want to say her name was Gloria, but I could be completely guessing on that.
No, that was it.
And she's also always wearing like basically a Kill Bill hot jumpsuit in every scene that's like a different color. Like they're dressed like Bond girls. They're wearing unnecessarily hot outfits, like not even, like, not practical even. Just like a leather jumpsuit in fucking Corsica. Like Jesus, the stink. And but it's just, I think like those little details were to make it maybe like, oh yeah, James Bond movies from the 60s and 70s. That's what those all look like. You know, the goons are all wearing weird outfits for some reason. The women are wearing these jumpsuits for no reason. Or they're dressed going to a tennis lesson. That was a part for an eigenvector at one point.
And also, at one of the bases, they have dessert of famous Amos cookies. And she's like, oh, that's cool. I was like, no, Amos is here. He bakes the cookies for us every day because he has employed famous Amos.
That guy just died, so it's possible. He is an inspiring dude, Wally Amos.
He made his mark on the world. Men just love cookies.
You know, I read his obituary. Well, that's how I know he died. And he was like 88, very old, black dude. And his mom had never learned to read. And he only learned to read as an adult. Like he was not a, you know, because it was like the Jim Crow South or whatever.
Yeah.
So when he was like wealthy and had his own weird little cookie shop in Hawaii where he lived, he had a room of books where he would just read to children while they ate cookies every day. Like, what a fucking nice dude. That's a beautiful thing. It's way better than those cookies, actually. So the next thing that happens plot-wise, though, like, once he gets the money, Walakitu is like, I need a car, but I don't know how to drive a car. And there's this whole little subplot where he drives to buy a used vehicle to learn, and the woman is like getting divorced from her husband and sells him the car and teaches him how to drive. And then she's like, this guy's weird. And he's like, I'm looking for nothing. And you're like, okay. And it doesn't matter. No, it just explains how he has a car all of a sudden, I think.
And then he
has some funny
does
episodes.
Does he even use it? I don't remember if he uses it.
He does. He uses it to drive to Washington, D.C. Later in the book. Yeah. But it could have just been like, I have a car. Like, it didn't matter. It's fucking stupid. And then, John Sill keeps just appearing at random places with increasingly elaborate ways to get out of being noticed. Like, the cops are right on Kitu, and they're like, we know you're working for Sill. What does he want? He's like, I told you he wants nothing. And they're like, God damn it, this joke is old. And then he's like, he'll tell Sill, yeah, that they're looking for me. He's like, that's great. Haha, I'm a villain. The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about. And then they go to a diner where he has a bunch of guys dressed as Sikhs slowly swap identities with them. Weird things happen. Just to really show that John Sill is all powerful. He has villain control over everything.
He can Austin Powers level idiocy.
Yes. Well, and then another running joke is that they want to get into they go into the Naval Academy to see
the Naval Observatory.
Yeah.
Which is where the vice president lives.
And everyone's like, no one gives a fuck about the vice president.
Yeah, you can go in there. No one cares.
That was a running joke throughout the whole thing. Shouldn't there be more security? He's like, no, it's the fucking vice president. He's a shit.
So John Sill, first he says, we're going to break into Fort Knox. To get the gold?
And
no.
Nothing.
To get nothing. We're going to take nothing. It's like, what? And then he's like, and then we're going to hijack the satellite because the satellite has nothing. And it's like, oh, okay, what? And then you finally, 90% of the way into the book, it's like he actually does manage to hijack the satellite and makes Quincy, Massachusetts disappear. Because he's like, someone was racist to me once in Quincy, Massachusetts.
No, it's because Quincy is full of racists, which is true.
He's like, I hate the way they say it, Quincy.
And now Quincy is nothing, meaning it literally doesn't exist on the map. Like, the shape of Massachusetts is actually squashed to that part just disappears.
It never was.
And nobody knows where. And then two pages later, he sees the cop guys again. Say, he made Quincy, Massachusetts disappear. And they're like, where? Who? Let me look that up. No. There's no Quincy, Massachusetts. It's because it's now nothing. It has never existed. And so it's just completely gone. And that's the power of nothing, apparently. That's the whole joke.
Yeah. And you're like, okay. Why? How did the satellite do that? Change all the atlases? Can't think about it. It's like a funny joke for a hot second. And then you're like, this is okay.
It's, you know, metaphysical weaponry is always complicated.
I guess it is. Did Sartre say that?
I believe that was Steven Seagal.
Metaphysical weaponry.
You know, it's complicated.
It's really complicated. Aikido.
I put my pants again.
Putting on is a complicated weapon.
Nothing is better than Bunani. At one point, when Walakitu is trying to escape the hotel he's in to start fighting back against Sill to not eradicate the world with nothing, he has to jump off of the balcony, which he brings up how much he pees a little bit while he's swinging. He's like, I peed. I might have peed. I peed. I definitely peed.
Yeah. There are a lot of funny jokes like that.
It is really funny because it's such a fucking absurd thing. It's like a, it's almost like fucking Police Squad if it was like a highbrow Naked Gun kind of vibe.
I don't know if it's always very highbrow because there's one part where they mention the French physicist Jean-Luc Retard.
Some parts are not highbrow.
I laughed a lot, but I don't think that was highbrow. I thought that was fucking hysterical. Or the time when someone sends him a song and it's like a whole, I didn't fucking read it either. But then he just wrote, I wrote back, Dear John, that was a terrible song that I didn't understand. Voila. Like, just like silly things. Like, I don't know if that's highbrow either, but it was, they're just jokes and bits.
And there's a lot of, it's a personal ever book, so it's a lot of it is about racism. That's kind of what he writes about. The scene where he gets pulled over by a cop, and the cop is like, he's not armed. He is black. And they're like, get, you know, and the FBI, the boss, still controls everybody. So they're like, no, let him go. And the cop is like, he's black. You heard me say that, right? Like, yeah, cut him loose. Like, he has no license. He is black.
Yeah, it was unsubtle in those parts.
I don't think he's ever been accused of being a subtle writer.
The other two Percival Everett books we read, where everything about race is not subtle.
Well, that's why when there was all the stuff about nothing, and I was like, "Am I supposed? Is this supposed to mean something?" And maybe it did, and I totally missed it.
It seems like, I mean, just because like we read three of his books, and each book has like a not a gimmick, but like it's based on this one concept, and it seems he wanted to write a weird thriller. You know, like spoof thriller about the mathematical or philosophical concept of nothing. And he's like, yeah, I can roll with that. And it's like kind of Who's On First, but also kind of like trying to understand the concept of nothing as philosophers and scientists do, sandwiched into the Bond villain shit, which it is an odd combination, but he's a weird guy. I mean, it kind of works, but it is odd.
I just figured if this was supposed to mean something, he would have made it very clear. Like, if this was supposed to be about, if the nothing was about race, it would have hammered it into our fucking psyches.
I think that the nothing is not about race. I think, like, race is always a part of his books. But I think, like, this one, like, oh, yeah, he puts that in there, too. But, like, this is really about trying to understand the concept of nothingness, which is something that real smart people can't explain exactly what it is still.
I'll tell you what those real smart philosophers should use to explain it. The value of their goddamn high education there that they can't, like, it's worth nothing if you can't explain these simple things, asshole.
Well, the problem is it's not a simple thing.
You know what? Us naked monkeys we did fine for millions of years not worrying about nothing. Like, fucking give me a break.
Not worried about nothing.
Get a hobby, you fucking French nerd. There are other funny, like, another funny race line is when Syl starts killing people at the end. Like, things just kind of like go off the rails. And he says something like, sacrifices have to be made. If there's one thing all this money has made me, it's white.
It's true.
And he, like, starts killing off his goons. Like, I fucking need that guy. Or there's a part where he says, I hailed a taxi. Actually, I can hail the taxi. No one will stop for me. Yeah. So then they, through a bunch of fucking crazy chases, basically, they get to Fort Knox.
They get to Fort Knox, and they break in, and there are just stacks and stacks of gold bars. And John Syl is like, ah, fuck. God damn it. It's like, this, like, oh, she's like, I'm already rich. I didn't need all this. I was looking for nothing. And he's like, but I'll take the gold anyway. But it's like, I was looking for nothing. And then he goes like, wait, over there. And there's a cardboard box. It is literally a shoebox for PF Flyers. And he opens it. He's like, inside is nothing. I've got it. And then the, like, police break in, and then two of the other goons are like, I'm actually working for China, and I'm actually working for blah, blah, blah. You've worked for me for like 5 years. I'm in deep cover. And he's like, back off, or I'll open the box. Back off, or I'll unleash nothing.
There's one great line there when the guy who's a deep agent for China, and he goes, "I'm not giving this shoebox to someone named Shu." X-U-E.
That is a very Bond line. Also, Gloria, the hot pilot slash driver slash henchman, she turned out to be a robot, and he defeats her by asking her an absurd riddle that she can't answer, so she just turns off.
Because the whole time she's like, "Would you like sex now?"
Yeah.
And Eigenvector's been drugged most of the book.
Most of the book,
by,
yes.
Syl, and he's banging her and turning her into one of his hench girls. And she's like, "I don't really like this."
He turns her into like the, you know, dumb Bond girl who's just, you know, eye candy, even though she is a, you know, PhD mathematician.
Yeah, it says what she knows about math.
She's Dr. Christmas Jones, nuclear physicist.
So then what happens at the standoff?
And then at the very end, John Syl opens the box, and then nothing happens. Dun, dun, dun. The end.
Nothing happened. God help us, nothing happened. That's how it ends. And you go, "Oh, fuck you."
I mean, how else could it have ended?
I want to say,
yeah, of course,
this is actually his best ending, or at least of the ones that we've read.
Well, Trees didn't have an ending.
I agree with you, Nate.
And then, even though, because it fit, and in James, it's just sort of like, yeah, and then we got free. But it just, I forget exactly what I said about it, but it wasn't as satisfying. Whereas this actually fit with the rest of the book. Even though it's also like you don't know what's actually happening because nothing means more than one thing in this entire book. So when it says, "And then nothing happens," it's like, oh, fuck. Does that mean everybody died in some like horrible antimatter explosion?
It means they never were. Because I think they say like nothing is not antimatter or dark energy. It's not, nothing is the complete absence of a thing. Like just saying, like they have a whole chunk of like what putting a name on something is, you know,
makes it something. And
yeah.
Not nothing.
Makes it something. Yeah. So if nothing happens, then it just never was. It ceased to ever be.
The line also could mean nothing happened. Just
exactly. But you know what nothing probably sounded like?
Nothing.
I opened this a while ago, but like I realized we're running out of book. There's nothing left. It probably sounded like Silent Night in a New York City taproom. And this is an evil twin beer that is a Belgian style strong golden ale with orange peel and ginger. It's 12% alcohol. And I was really skeptical because I don't like any of those things. But goddamn, this tastes like Santa Claus's sweat. It's fantastic.
Is that a good thing?
Oh. Ho, 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 it is, my friend. It tastes like elf slavery. This is great. It's delicious. Seasonal, but not too much, because I can't take more fucking cinnamon things.
Mm.
Or allspice and nutmeg. So, Nate, the book, you picked it. What did you think of it?
It was all right, which is, I gave it 3 stars. Like, there are some funny things, and it's satire, which I like, and I thought the ending actually fit with the rest of the book. So it's like, okay, great. But still, this was actually less about race than the other two books that we read. Though race is definitely in there. But yeah, I mainly is like, okay, yeah, it was funny. So when the book was described to me and when I looked it up on the internet, it was like, this is a book that's about James Bond. And it's like, okay, yes. I mean, technically that's true, but it was also like, even though it has all this James Bond stuff, I was also not actually feeling like it was much like James Bond. It was just kind of weird, a series of weird things happening. Because the main character is awkward and autistic. It's like, this is not like James Bond at all. And the Bond villain is like, no, you're working with the villain. Like, that's also not a thing. It's kind of like, because James Bond is trying to defeat some thing, and that is not what the main character is doing. Anyway, so even though it is about James Bond, and it's good to like know that going into the book, it also didn't feel like it. Though there was a lot of funny stuff. And James Bond, you know, I was actually thinking about Austin Powers, the Austin Powers movies, a number of times. It's like, yeah, that was actually a better satire of James Bond. Yeah, that's what I think.
Well, there always is, like, the goon, like, the helper that the villain has. It's not one of his goons. It's like, and here I have Dr. whatever the fuck, who's going to program the satellite right now. And there's some, like, nebbishy-looking loser guy who does a thing, and then they kill him usually, or, you know, he gets killed in Crossfire or something.
Boris?
There's always, like, a random guy that he's like, I don't need him anyway. Like, that's who Walakitu was in this
the tech guy, book. You know.
You know, because the villain's an idea man.
It's a big picture.
Not, you know, he does, you know, they're famously not micromanaging about certain things.
Definitely a delegator. But we'll take credit for all the work.
Well, yeah. It was fun, but I thought the nothing joke really got tired fast. And then the ending was like, oh, Jesus. But it was a fun couple hours. It wasn't the worst thing we read this year, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I thought of the three books of his, I liked this one the best. It certainly wasn't as heavy as the other two. But is it, you know, would it be considered as high literature? No, probably for that exact reason also. I thought it was pretty funny. I didn't mind the nothing joke. It was, you know, it was a bit. It was whatever. I didn't understand why he chose to delve so heavily into the concept of the idea of nothing and, like, the limitations on naming a thing amidst the goofy satire. Like, I don't know. Maybe he just, like, I don't know what the goal was. I didn't mind it. It was a very short book. And I did like the ending. I thought it was appropriate. I enjoyed it. I don't know why he did this. that was my main question. Was like, oh, this. I just didn't understand the reasoning. But, you know, I feel like the whole thing could have existed without all the delving into nothingness.
This was, I think he wrote this in between The Trees and James, or it was published in between them at least.
I mean, The Trees just ended a third of the way in, which was my main critique of that.
Like, it would have been a good book. Started strong, but then didn't go anywhere.
It didn't go anywhere. Like, nothing happened. Like, the second part of the book didn't exist. It's like, what the fuck? It was confusing. And, you know, James was what it was. But this one was weirdly goofy. Though, I will say the best thing of his still that I enjoyed was the American Fiction movie, which was based on one of his other books. Fantastic film. Also, way closer to this than the other stuff.
Like, I think that book, which is Erasure,
yeah,
probably is.
It's like meta, silly. Goofy, yeah. Silly.
But, like, making fun of something. Whereas...
Yeah, also...
It's making fun of book awards, actually.
Book awards. Also largely, much more largly focused on race. But...
But I think also making fun of, like, white book critics and their...
Yes.
Yeah. Weird... attitudes about race and how they're very willing to buy into it is bullshit, right? Like, it was like we's live in the ghetto or something like that is the name of the book.
Yeah, it was like, you know, it was what the idea of quote unquote black literature is, because he's a black author who writes like kind of like modern retellings of Greek myths allegorically or something, and they're like, this shit sucks, no one would read this stuff. And but they put his books in the black literature bookstore. He's like, why is this here? Like, because, well, right, the author is black
literature,
like,
well, means what? Yeah.
But it's, you know,
you know what, I think that's a book we're gonna have to read.
I'd like to read it. So
yeah, I mean, his books are short.
I also really want to read The History of the African-American People by Strom Thurmond.
Honestly, that's probably the best. That's probably the best one.
That's the greatest title of a book I've ever heard. So, yeah, he's funny. It gave me, I don't know, I was trying, the only thing, it's not really similar, but like funny book we read recently was fucking that Kurt Vonnegut book, where I was like, this is a smart book that's also funny. Where this book was like also, you know, you could tell this guy's not, you know, this is a smart writer.
Yeah, he's definitely a smart guy.
I just, you know, it was a smidge too long. could have been a little shorter. Would have been fine. But I will try more of his books. Apparently we will.
Yeah.
Well, tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Follow us on Twitter at drunkguys, or X at drunkguysbc.
And go to the Facebooks and the Instagrams at the Drunk Guys Book Club and Goodreads. Also, that is the name there.
And the Patreon we mentioned, and the reviews. Those are nice, too.
The nice ones are nothing. Nice. The mean ones are not.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.